This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Hello, my name is Paddy McDonagh and welcome to the sixth and final part of Travel Stories. In this programme, we look at the Irish Government's input to policy and development, which has been implemented locally and nationally for travellers. This programme also focuses on travellers' participation in politics, activism and community development work, and how this participation will have a positive impact for future generations of travellers. Visiting teacher for travellers Declan Clark believes from 1955 to 1980, travellers became less valued in Irish society, and this is reflected in the earliest government reports in the early 60s.
I think it's a critical period because in many ways up until that time, travellers were very valued in amongst society, and society bit by bit during that about 25-year period started to question what they felt about travellers. Travellers themselves were no longer able to make a living going from place to place, so a lot of them ended up settling on the outskirts of towns in very poor conditions, in unofficial sites or on the side of the road with no services. And bit by bit, a lot of travellers will say they felt that Irish society turned its back on them during that time. Also during that time, they became dependent on social welfare as the main source of income. So that would have an effect in terms of their own well-being. So it seems to have been a very challenging period for travellers. I think if you go back to some of the first reports that emerged from government in relation to travellers in the 60s, there was very much a clear kind of tone there that travellers were a problem, viewed as a problem by government, and they weren't really valued as a community in their own right. Bit by bit, I think that's changed. And so if you go to one of the more recent documents, which you could recognise that change, is the 1995 Task Force report, which is a much more positive document. And I think since then, most of the kind of the philosophy behind a lot of government policy is more positive, and it wants to be more inclusive, and it wants to assist travellers to take a full role in our society.
I spoke to Martin Collins at Pavy Point about government policies in relation to travellers over the last 50 years.
I think there has been some big changes in terms of government policy as it relates to travellers. The very first government policy that was ever produced was the Commission on Itinerancy back in 1963. And what was quite interesting about that report was it sat for 2 years, from 1961 until 1963. Then, it published its report in 1963. There were no travellers involved in the putting together of that report. It was all settled people. It was civil servants. It was politicians. It was the clergy. Travellers didn't have a voice. Travellers didn't have a say, which in itself, of course, is unacceptable. But anyway, that report essentially promotes the notion that travellers are a dysfunctional people, essentially a backward people who need to be assimilated and rehabilitated. So really from 1963 up until around maybe 82, 83, the focus of the state and the state's institutions was to basically get rid of travellers through a whole range of different policies and different programmes and different initiatives. It wasn't really until around 1982 that the focus began to change. And it began to change because of groups like Mincare Misley, which means traveller movement. Mincare meaning traveller and Misley meaning move. So Mincare Misley, traveller movement. It was an all traveller movement. And they began to question this analysis and began to offer a new approach and a new analysis around the traveller question. And then really in 1985, with the establishment of Pavy Point, that really, you know, made a huge contribution in terms of turning the old school of thought on its head, that travellers are dysfunctional and backward and need to be rehabilitated. So really, you know, from the mid-80s, things began to change, and then the government started to take note and began to look at the traveller question in a very different way, and, you know, began to talk more about, you know, culture, about identity, about language, about people's history, and so forth. But I suppose the most significant development was the 1995 Task Force report. And that's quite significant in that, in the putting together of that report, you had, you know, civil servants from the government departments, you had the clergy, you had the trade union movement, you had politicians, and more importantly of all, you had traveller organisations. So, for example, the Irish Traveller Movement was involved in it, the National Traveller Women's Forum, and Pavy Point. And we brought, you know, our understanding of the traveller question to the table. And by and large, you know, you could say that our analysis gets reflected in that report. And one of the most important recommendations of the Task Force report of 95 is that it recommends that the distinct culture and identity of travellers must be recognised. So that was a huge, important development. So that was a turning point, really. But in 1995, I mean, that didn't come about by accident. It came about because there was 12 the 15 years of, you know, hard lobbying, campaigning and trying to get the message across from travel groups to the government, to media and to politicians and so forth.
Catherine Joyce from Branchestown Traveller Project speaks about the importance of the 1995 Government Task Force report on travellers.
As a result of the 95 Task Force report on travellers, the government took on to, and consecutive governments have taken on to implement the policy of that. And they do, that document does go a long way to meeting a lot of the needs in relation to travellers. So, for instance, it said that all travellers should be accommodated in mainstream accommodation and should have access to transient sites and halting sites if they need it. And it's about choice and about need rather than about service and an issue or a difficulty where the government sees it as a problem in terms of accommodating travellers. Likewise, in relation to education, it says that government should recognise travellers' distinct way of life, that it should recognise that in education, and that there should be an emphasis on ensuring that travellers have access to mainstream education, but that they also have attainment levels of settled people in those schools. So the policies are actually there, and they've been around for quite a while. The difficulty that we have is implementation of those policies and negative changes that are going to impact on that. So if you take education as one issue. Recently, government have been starting to implement changes as a result of cuts and the downturn in the economy. Those cuts have meant that crucial services to travellers are being withdrawn, like the resource teachers, the travel visiting teacher service, transport to schools. Those policies are being impacted, even though they were never fully implemented. They're negatively being impacted now because of the downturn in the economy. So I would say that the positive policies in relation to ensuring full inclusion and addressing of traveller needs are already in existence. The problem that we have is the failure to implement the policies that were developed in conjunction with travel organisations. I suppose the most recent and significant piece of information that has occurred in the most recent years is the Travel All Ireland Health Study. And the health study does have a lot of government policies and statements in relation to what the government can do to improve the status of travellers' health that actually puts in place a strategy for addressing those issues. Whereas before it was just statements of fact, now it's actually a strategy that will address those needs.
Michael McDonough from eTraveller Workshop believes any government policy on travellers must take into account the current speed of change that travellers have to adapt to.
What would you see as the biggest changes in relation to policy that the government has brought out in relation to travellers?
I think if we look at what has happened for travellers, if you take Irish society and you look at Irish society as a whole, and you take 100 years of change within Ireland, and it's unbelievable the amount of changes that has taken place. If you look at Ireland 100 years ago, it was a rural country, it was very little urban, it was a farming community, it was all these different, the lifestyle was totally different, what we eat was different, how we grew our food. Ireland has changed so much, and it had to adapt to so much over 100 years. And if you look at having to adapt to the whole urbanisation of the country, having to adapt to the change in family structure, and all these changes, which are major changes, happened over 100 years, condense that to 20 to 25 years, and that's what happened to travellers. And any group of people that have to go through that process of change in such a short space of time, it has to do damage, regardless of what we do, no matter what cushions we put in place, it's going to do damage. Because you don't change a people that quick. It takes a process of change, it takes time. I think for travellers, the change that has taken place from coming to be extremely nomadic people to becoming sedentary people, from coming from a sense of extended family supports to isolation of a small family unit. They are the big changes that has taken place.
Government policies in relation to travellers have changed over the years, largely because of traveller activism. We asked Martin Collins about the history of traveller activism.
I think the whole notion of traveller activism really began in 1985 with the establishment of Pavey Point Traveller Centre. Now, I do know, you know, to be fair, Minkir Mislead, a traveller-only organisation, was established in 1983. Unfortunately, it disbanded after 2 years. They were, if you like, to the fore in putting that out, you know, the whole notion that travellers need to be doing things for themselves. But I think it was brought to a whole new level in 1985 with the establishment of Pavey Point Traveller Centre. You know, we put a lot of emphasis, a lot of training, a lot of resources into training travellers, encouraging travellers and mentoring travellers to become leaders and to become activists. So I would say that from really 1985 onwards, this whole notion of self-determination really took hold. I remember as a young traveller, only 18 at the time, getting involved. And I suppose that there are times in your life when you say, like, you know, there are moments and there are incidents that really inspire you and you want to try and do things and change things. And one of the highlights for me really was the Dunstore strike in 1985, where staff of Dunstore refused to handle South African produce because they felt that buying South African goods, you were propping up the apartheid regime in South Africa. And they had a protest outside Dunstore's on Henry Street. And that was the very first protest that was ever in my natural life. But to be quite honest, I was only 18, a bit naive, didn't know what I was getting involved in. But I remember John O'Connell, who was one of the founding members of this organisation, sitting down with us and explaining why we were going to this protest, explaining the purpose of the protest, and explaining the purpose and explaining the connection between buying South African produce in Dunstores in Henry Street in Ireland, and how that connects back to the apartheid regime in South Africa, where you had white minority rule and black majority didn't have a vote and didn't have a say in their own country. And you make those connections and then you start to see things differently. And that was the beginning for me, really. So, look, you can sit down, be in workshops, you can be in seminars and a whole lot of it, but, you know, there are certain events and certain moments that just politicise you in a way that no other thing or situation can.
So how did Martin's early introduction to activism change things for him and members of his community?
So then in terms of your own community, you know, when you witness very bad things happening, you want to try and do something about it. Like, to give you an example, a young traveller boy, 14 years of age, died, Lord rest him. The family live out in Ashbourne and they're in-laws of mine, and they wanted the body to be brought out of Ashbourne and to be reposed. That's the fancy word I'm told. But anyway, they wanted the body to be housed in a funeral parlour in Ashbourne, and the funeral parlour actually refused to have this young traveller boy, 14 years of age, in the funeral parlour. So when you witness a situation like that, you know, that pisses you off, that makes you angry, and it makes you want to try and do something to change the situation. So, yeah, so I think, you know, there are certain events and certain moments in your in life that just impact on you in a way that no other thing can. You know, in terms of my own journey around traveller activism, there are other travellers out there who I've looked to, and they too have encouraged me and inspired me to want to do things. Like, I remember back in 85, in that very first programme, there was a chap there by the name of Thomas McCann. And when that course finished in 1986, he went on to Minute College. And he was the very first traveller to go there that we are aware of and to do the 2-year community work course. And he went there for 2 years, he qualified and he got his diploma. And I remember at the time looking at Thomas and saying, isn't that great? And I know then every year since that, or almost every year since that, there's been a traveller doing that very same course that Thomas did back in 1986. So Thomas, if you like, paved the path for other travellers to follow suit. And so I know people like Thomas McCann has been very inspirational. And I remember as a young fella as well, you know, people like Nan Joyce standing for the general election, you know, and having our posters, being on the media and all the rest of it. So, you know, there's people out there who have inspired me too, like, as I said, Nan Joyce, Thomas McCann and so forth. I hope, you know, that in the same way that I looked at Thomas McCann and Nan Joyce for inspiration, I hope, even if it's only one or two, I would certainly hope that, you know, they would look to me and say, yeah, well, look, I like what Martin has been doing and I would like to do something similar. Even if it's only one or two, I would be satisfied with that. But do we have one or two? I don't know.
John Paul Collins of Pavey Pint cites the activist John O'Connell and traveller-led organisation Mink Care Misley as being an inspiration to him and other travellers.
In the early 80s, John O'Connell, God rest him, came back from South America and he'd seen a number of evictions, travellers being evicted from the various different parts of the country. And it was him, along with others, who said, look, we need to take a stance at this and try to develop responses to it. And that took on a number of accounts in terms of that. And John, working with disadvantages in South America, he took the whole ethos of Palo Freire, self-determination and the community responding for themselves in terms of developing the capacity of the community in relation to responding to the issues that are facing them. And in 84, 85, John got a group of travellers together, 24 travellers, both male and female, which was a 6-month anchor programme at the time. It stemmed from there, really. Then you had Mink Care Misley, which was a travel-led organisation in the early 80s, for unfortunately the support wasn't there to keep it going. Then you had popping up a number of local travel organisations right across the country over the next 15 or 20 years. So there is a number of key activists. But over the last 10 years, there has been a number of young travel activists that have come through. So for a period of time, there was 7 or 8 travel activists across the country, and it stood still for a while in terms of 7 or 8, but I think over the last 5 or 10 years there has been a number of young up and coming travel activists right across the country. I think it plays a key importance, and it had a key influence in terms of how politicised travellers are today in terms of responding to issues that face the community.
Father Derek Farrell from the Parish of the Travelling People believe there are some very strong activists within travel organisations.
I think when I first came in to the parish of the travelling people here 5 years ago, one of the first things that I was struck by was both the number and the quality, if you like, of the traveller organisations. And it was a discovery for me that so many organisations existed. But when I sort of got to see the work that they were doing and the people involved, I was very struck that the organisations themselves have very talented people working within them. And I think because of the issues that are involved, you know, sometimes it might be around prejudice or human rights or whatever it is, that there's a training or a grounding goes on within those organisations, which brings to the fore the talents of the people who are involved. So I think that probably is an ongoing thing. And I suppose with the education as well, levels rising all the time within the wider community, the traveller community, you know, people are going further and further. I think that's only going to continue. And I think there's some great potential and great talent within those organisations.
Catherine Joyce remembers travellers and settled people coming together to protest for travellers' rights. And she also speaks about the important role that travel organisations have played in promoting travel activism.
I suppose the first memory that I have of travel activism is when travellers in the Ballyfermot area were out protesting for accommodation. And at that time, there was Grattan Puxton, who was an English campaigner, came back here and supported them in trying to look for accommodation and education in the Ballyfermot area. And you had travellers at that time, which I didn't realise until recently, who were very actual vocal and who were involved in starting campaigns and protests and pickets to try and achieve travel rights. I don't know if that's the first or the earliest evidence of travellers, but it certainly was a significant time for travellers in terms of engaging with settled people to campaign for travel rights. Prior to that, it might have been just travellers campaigning for their own rights. This was more of a joint effort by travellers and settled people to campaign for travellers' rights. But I think in more recent years, in the 80s and the 90s, you had local travel organisations and some national organisations who were actually providing courses that would allow travellers to build up their capacity, build up their understanding, to gain confidence in political speaking and political lobbying. So those organisations have to be credited for the skills that they gave travellers in relation to becoming advocates for their own community. The one thing that I would say, that not all travellers have to be a travellers' rights activist, and not all travellers want to be travellers' rights activists, but the reality is those who have come through the travel organisations, I suppose, have stayed and have been involved for quite a long time and engaged not just with state agencies from the point of view of trying to be politically against what their policies are, but about trying to work with local authorities, work with national organisations, work with government departments in trying to proactively address the accommodation and education needs of travellers. So I think those group of people have come as a result of the joint efforts of travel organisations and settled people and travellers who work in those organisations to try and build the capacity of travellers to actually represent themselves. And I don't think anybody out there would believe that people are going to come from a situation where they're marginalised, discriminated, illiterate in some cases, and be able to have the confidence to speak to somebody in the local authority about their accommodation needs. That does need to be supported and it needs to be helped. And where we've seen the most support for that is through the work of local travel organisations.
Nancy Power from Travel Mavs believes that travellers need to be encouraged more to participate in the political system, but also feels that travellers need to be proactive in their local communities.
Few travellers have emerged as politicians. Why do you think this is? And do you think there's more to encourage more travellers to seek election, or should they run for election, do you think?
There seems to be a lot more travellers involved in the political system outside of Dublin. I don't know why this is. I think more encouragement of travellers to be partake in the political system and politicians and run for elections should be encouraged both by the school, by the parents and by community groups that are involved with travellers. I think in the recent past, and saying that there's been a lot of travellers, new travellers become involved in travel activists. How did this happen in the early 80s, I think a lot had to do with the programmes that were set up due to heavy point of time. A lot of travellers that I know would be involved around that. How can more be encouraged to emerge in the future? I think with the way the system is at the minute, travellers need to be more active themselves within their community, because with the cutbacks, I don't think there will be travel organisations in the future. And I think that travellers need to take the initiative themselves in their local community groups.
Historically, when it comes to local and national politics, very few travellers have put themselves forward. Michael McDonough from Meath Traveller Workshop looks at why this may be and suggests it may change in the future.
Other than Martin Ward and Tune, there's very few travellers that have moved on into politics. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a reason because of this, or do you think the travellers are more involved in being an activist for their own community?
I think it's only in recent years that travellers are even voting. Prior to this, travellers never voted because they never felt part of society, and regardless of what politician got in, it didn't make any damn difference to them, they'd feel. But now more and more travellers are using their vote, and more travellers are seeing the importance of it, and more travellers are involved in politics, not necessarily as politicians, but I'm very much involved and very politicised. And I think the whole thing, if you look at a lot of the community development work that's been done in this country, a lot of travellers are actively and heavily involved in that. And not only for travellers. They're involved in it in for youth and youth across the board, or involved for community and community across the board. It's not just solely for travellers. But I do think travellers have acquired absolutely top-class skills in relation to youth and community development. I think a lot of travellers are very good at that. So I think that shows that putting a bit of opportunity. And when we talk about politics and we talk about being involved and all that, I think that necessity is always the mother of invention. And I think for a lot of travellers, it became a necessity to be involved, and it became a necessity to actually try and do something because of the whole injustice that was out there. And I think that's why a lot of travellers are involved at that level. Now, for the future, you'd never know. We never thought we'd get a black man into the White House, but we did. So let's see when the next traveller will be president, or the next traveller will be Taoiseach, you know? Be quiet change then.
We asked some of our contributors, what do they see are the biggest challenges for travellers in the future?
Education-wise, it's so important that travellers keep pace with education with the settled community, and that they make the most of the opportunities that are there for them to maximise their qualifications. I think a great deal of progress has been made in terms of improving education, but there is still work to do in that area. Also, in terms of employment, there's big issues there. And I think bit by bit that they will resolve themselves, largely because the younger people are taking a greater role in education.
State policy is there. We have legislation that's there to ensure that negative discrimination doesn't happen against travellers. Everybody in local areas, local area partnership companies, local CDP programmes, travel organisations, schools, the guards, any intervention programmes at a local level, all of those programmes and organisations have a role to play to ensure that there is full integration of travellers. And that integration is about ensuring that travel culture and pride is taken into consideration and given the respect that it's needed.
If I had a magic wand, what would I do with it? And why would I love to see what would happen for travellers? I think the future for travellers actually lies very much in the education of today's travellers. I think if we as travellers do not get educated, and I mean educated properly, I'm not talking about this sort of haphazard approach to the education of travellers and not having travellers educated in relation, have them educated in relation to you not be a traveller if you want to become a professional, if you want to become a doctor, if you want to become a judge, if you want to become a barrister, you want to come and say you can't be a traveller to do that. And I think we have to move away from that thinking. And I think that's the future for travellers. I think travellers need to be educated because education is like a weapon. And I use that properly. I don't mean it as a dangerous weapon, although education is very dangerous. If we educate, if our travellers are educated today, they can express themselves more, let other people understand their fears, their wants and their needs, but also to express their responsibilities and their commitments. So I think it's really important for travellers to be educated so as travellers have a future. If we don't, we ain't going to have a future, and that's as travellers. So we do need travellers to actually go through a process of education, but that process of education should not be a process of assimilation. It should be a process of celebration and resourcing, and that's where the important bit is.
Is there anything in particular that makes you feel proud about being a traveller?
The obvious things are family, the family unit, the support of the extended family, close relations with cousins, uncles and aunts. There's no question mark that I'm very proud and confident of who I am in terms of the travellerness within me.
What makes me proud about being a traveller? For me, certainly, it's the aspects of our culture, value systems that travellers have, our language, even though I don't have a lot of it. And for me, certainly, is the extended family and the importance of the extended family within our community. People in our community actually make me very proud about being travellers. People who have gained significantly in entertainment or sports or in travel activism.
to be proud of who you are, to your family. I mean, you can try and hide that you're not a traveller, but you still know, no matter where you go in society or who you mix with, that the travellers always come up in the conversation, and to be able to be proud of your identity and your roots.
I think I am most proud of the fact that we have come through oppression, exclusion, and we have survived that. We have come through it as a very strong and as a very resilient and a very proud people. You know, that we have stood the test of time, as it were, with our culture and with our identity and integrity fully intact. So I think I'm most proud of that.
Travellers are grannies, grandfathers, mummies, daddies, sisters, brothers. They're the same as everybody else, and their wants and needs are the exact same. So I think when we look at what's the most common denominator around here, like travellers feel the pinch of the recession. Travellers felt the pinch of the recession when it was actually in the height of the tiger. It's that sense of people coming together to support one another, and I think travellers are part and parcel of that. And that's building a huge bridge.
And that's where we leave our sixth and final programme of Traveller Stories. My name is Paddy McDonough, and I would like to thank Martin Collins, John Paul Collins, Father Derek Farrell, Nancy Power, Catherine Joyce, Declan Clark, Bridget Nevin, Kathleen McDonough and Joseph McDonough for their contribution to these programmes. I would also like to thank series producer Leslie Murphy and all at Near FM and Travark for their support on this project. This series is co-produced and edited by Paul Loughran. We hope these six programmes have given you an insight into the unique history and way of life of travellers, and broaden your understanding of some of the issues that we as travellers face on a daily basis. We hope that these series of programmes will leave an audio documentary for posterity, both for travellers and settled people.
I'm sorry I made you cry the day my lady died down deep in the sun. For freedom's road, lady, you couldn't be trapped in her cage. Your heart was soft like oak, war but never stained. It was always warm and close to me, and it never told me lies. The day my lady died, till the day my lady died, when a part of me died down deep inside. Where is my traveling lady, who gave her heart so free? Promised till the end of time she'd always stay with me. Lord, I can't forget her, nor how I died. The day my lady died, the day my lady died, oh, part of me died down deep inside. My lady went and died. My lady went and died in a part of me that died on deep inside. My lady went and died in a part of me that died on deep inside.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.